welcome to the KMXT Weekly Wrap, where we go over this week's news from Alaska's Emerald Isle. I'm your host, Davis Hovey. On this week's recap, Kodiak Island Borough School District schools are preparing for a new school year.
We also acknowledge that because of reconfiguration, all of our elementary schools are beginning anew this week. It's bittersweet, but it's also full of potential and great opportunity.
More about that story later, but first...
Support for KMXT comes from the Kodiak Area Native Association's Substance Use Treatment Team. Talk with your kids about drugs and tobacco. No matter how young children are, talking with them is one of the best things you can do to keep them drug and tobacco free. Learn more at KodiakHealthcare.org or 907-486-7380.
On Thursday, August 21st, just after 10 p.m., a rocket was launched from the Pacific Spaceport Complex, Alaska, on Kodiak Island. Residents from around the island and even elsewhere in the state took to social media to share videos and reactions to the launch, which was not publicly announced. Travis Amoto posted a video that night on Facebook from Akiak showing a rocket flying across the sky at 10:09 p.m. Dozens of people commented on Amoto's post, some noting that there was no advance notice given to the public about the launch, and many questioned where the rocket came from in the first place. The following morning, on August 22nd, the Alaska Aerospace Corporation confirmed in a press release that a successful government rocket launch occurred from the spaceport on Kodiak Island Thursday night. The statement did not say what the purpose of the launch was or anything more about the payload. An online blog that tracks satellites and analyzes missile tests from the Netherlands, called SatTrackCam, theorized that the launch was a hypersonic missile test. A similar government hypersonic test failed at the Kodiak Island spaceport in October of 2021. Based on navigational warnings issued by the Maritime Safety Office earlier this month, the rocket launch included hazard areas around Kodiak Island, the Gulf of Alaska, and the North Pacific near the Marshall Islands. CEO and president of the Alaska Aerospace Corporation, John Oberst, told KMXT previously that it's likely more road closures will be announced in the near future. The country's largest Coast Guard base is building up its infrastructure to accommodate new vessels and more crew members coming to Kodiak within the next few years. Lieutenant Commander Tyler Vieira with the Coast Guard's Facilities Design and Construction Center gave KMXT an update on the ongoing construction work on Coast Guard Base Kodiak. Earlier this month, the Coast Guard put into service the second of three new fast response cutters to be homeported in Kodiak. Each one is a crew of roughly 25 on board. Many have brought their families to town. The third one is expected to arrive and be in service before the end of this year. Those crews, their families, plus other new personnel on base and at Air Station Kodiak all need housing. Vieira, who has been working in Kodiak for the last 2.5 years, says 25 new duplexes, or 50 units total, were completed earlier this summer.
Yeah, it was the general plus up. So it's not specifically, you know, if you're on one of those boats, you're going into that housing unit. But just in general, the need to provide additional housing for all the units stationed here in Kodiak.
Vieira says the Coast Guard is also planning a housing expansion to build 15 additional duplexes at the same Nimitz complex in the coming years. That project could go out to bid by the spring of next year. On top of the new crew members and families that came with the cutters, he's expecting an additional 300 people to come to Coast Guard Base Kodiak over the next 10 years or less. Meanwhile, Vieira is also overseeing an expansion of dock space and a fuel pier project. He says this will create a floating pier and bigger berths to dock up to 5 ships at the same time, all 3 new fast response cutters and 2 larger offshore patrol cutters, or OPCs, that he expects will be built by the fall of 2027. These 2 larger cutters are expected to bring roughly 100 crew members each and be homeported in Kodiak.
So at least the 2 OPCs and then the 3 FRCs, and then you know, we're always an important logistics hub, so not only just home-ported vessels, but future Coast Guard operations in the Arctic District.
A new maintenance and weapons detachment building equipped with a 3D printer, fabrication and mechanical equipment was also completed earlier this year to help service and maintain the new vessels coming to Kodiak. Vieira says that MAT building, or maintenance augmentation team, is expected to be staffed by 50 or more service members. Upgrades have also been made to the cutter storage warehouse on base, and a new buoy yard was built as well, according to a Coast Guard press release. In other news, the Aleutic Museum held its annual meeting on Tuesday, August 26th, the first one in its newly renovated building that reopened in May. KMXT's Brian Venwell reports they also recognize some challenges the museum could face in the coming years.
A small crowd of about a dozen people filled seats in the Lutic Museum's presentation room, listening to the board review what staff had been up to in the last year. Stacy Simmons was appointed to the board just this year by Kodiag, Kodiag's regional native corporation. She says she was impressed with the staff even during construction.
There was so many new things, but really how the Lutic Museum stayed the course even through this tremendous construction that they did, and how they stayed connected both to the community and offered opportunities for tourists coming through.
And after the grand reopening, Simmons says she's proud to see family heirlooms in the displays, like one of her great-great-grandfather's paddles. He used it to get to California to get an education and later paddled back, becoming an interpreter for the village church in Afognak.
That's the paddle that he used.
That
and
so
cool. Funny enough, it was in my, you know, it was my house in Old Harbor where I grew up. And I never knew what it was. Like, I never knew what a treasure we had.
Executive Director April Lactone and Counselor joined a hands-on activity in the museum's atrium.
We're doing a little simple beading activity so everyone can make a necklace similar to those ones that were given out during the grand reopening.
Counselor made one with red and ivory-colored beads with a few amber bead accents on a simple repeating pattern. But the meeting had some business too, like looking at the museum's finances. The nonprofit had over $8 million in revenue from its store and publications on Aleutic history and learning the Aleutic language, among other sources. Counselor says last year was about average for grants, but those could be harder to come by in the near future. The federal government gutted the Institute for Museums and Library Sciences earlier this year.
It's still a really uncertain landscape right now. We had one small grant that was reinstated after being terminated, but it was a grant we had already spent down.
Yeah.
So it really didn't make a difference.
The Trump administration also terminated three other grants previously awarded to the museum. She says her team requested reviews, but hasn't heard anything back. Now they're looking at grants from other sources, like the Administration for Native Americans within the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. She says that's going to be key going forward.
You know, we're looking into what other types of revenues we can increase to help be diversified enough. Because even as a nonprofit, you still have to be diversified in order to stay open.
That includes looking at how to increase revenue from the store or finding partnerships for interns. For now, the whole team is just getting used to being open again after the nearly 2-year closure. Wearing a newly beaded black, white, and blue necklace, I'm Brian Benoit.
Biologists found over 50 dead migratory birds near beaches at the southern end of Kodiak's road system on Tuesday. The Shunack Tribe of Kodiak's Natural Resources Department took samples of the birds, all of which were shearwaters. Matt Van Dale with the tribe says they are working with federal partners like the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to determine the cause. Similar seabird and marine mammal die-off events in Kachemak Bay, Nome, and the Pribilof Islands are also being investigated. Shearwaters would normally be preparing to fly as far south as Australia and New Zealand for the winter. The tribe's staff suspect the group in Kodiak died of paralytic shellfish poisoning from a harmful algal bloom, but it could also be a resurgence of avian influenza or another issue. The tribe is asking anyone who finds sick or dead birds to keep kids and pets away from them and report the birds to Shunack's Natural Resources Department. This month, the Kodiak Island Borough Landfill has seen an uptick in bear activity, which has drawn in more human traffic as well. The issue is creating a safety hazard for tourists, borough employees, and even the bears themselves. But as KMXT reports, the solutions are not straightforward. Nate Svoboda is a wildlife biologist with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak. During a borough assembly meeting earlier this month, Svoboda told the assembly about what has become an evening ritual: Kodiak brown bears and onlookers gathering at the landfill.
As some of you may know, the landfill has recently became the go-to place on Kodiak Island to watch and photograph bears.
Roughly 8 to 13 different bears are believed to be accessing trash at the dump north of the city at any given time, according to Svoboda. Bears have been getting through gaps in the landfill's fence, which has sections that are electric, and it's been an issue for years.
Unfortunately, these bears and their young are now conditioned to non-natural foods, I use that loosely, trash, and it's unlikely they will change their foraging habits after having access to non-natural foods for so long.
Svoboda says when bears become reliant on eating trash instead of their natural diets, then that can lead to intestinal blockages or other health complications and even result in death. But the Kodiak Island Borough has more concerns beyond just the bears' health. Engineering and Facilities Director Cody Allen says they also have to protect their employees.
Because if they're coming up and not moving for a machine that's operating right beside them, or they're waiting outside of your car when you pull in at 7 in the morning, the staff aren't really having a safe work environment.
He says if the bears don't leave, they may have to get the troopers involved. 2 miles of chain-link fence circles the perimeter of the borough landfill. As of late last week, that perimeter included an intact electric fence, rock piles, and metal bracing reinforcing the fencing in various places. Allen says they've been making repairs where the bears have gotten through, added electric wires, and cleared brush around the fence line to deter bears all since November of last year. But none of it has stopped the powerful, roughly 1,000-pound animals from frequently entering the landfill.
I've seen the bears come through the fence. They walk or run, and they'll just go right through a fence. And they've pushed down the chain link fence. They've pushed open gates. It is quite the challenge to get them to stay out.
Allen is not sure how much the borough has spent on bear protection so far, but he guesses it's easily thousands of dollars. He says there will continue to be regular maintenance costs because there's really no way to make the landfill 100% bear proof.
I don't foresee it being a one-and-done kind of thing. This is definitely an ongoing, it's something that we're going to have to budget for.
So Allen says the best solution, other than killing the bears, would be for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game to remove the bears from the landfill before they go into hibernation. Then borough staff can reinforce the landfill fence and electrify the perimeter with a higher voltage to prevent bear access in the future. In the meantime, people and bears will likely continue to descend on the landfill in the last of the summer nights around sundown. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Hovey. And our final story for this week, town elementary schools' schedules and traffic patterns are shifting. Cell phones were banned in the Kodiak High School during instruction, and the district is opening honors classes this year. KMXT's Brian Venois reports.
Hundreds of Kodiak Island Borough School District's teachers, administrators, and support staff sit in an auditorium serenaded by their peers who prepared a few show tunes to sing. Convocation is the one time each year all district staff meet in a single room. Superintendent Cindy Micka introduced this year's theme, Believe.
Belief is more than a feeling. It's a decision we make every day. To believe in ourselves, to believe in one another, to believe in our students, and in their potential to grow, overcome, and succeed.
Micka says that includes asking the community to keep believing in Kodiak's public schools, despite major changes coming this school year. The most obvious being that North Star Elementary will not reopen. The school board voted to close it earlier this year and transferred all of its staff to the remaining schools because of an $8 million deficit. The other town elementary schools are now split up by grade levels. East Elementary will serve kindergarten through third grade, while Main Elementary will serve fourth and fifth graders. Katrina Stewart, the director for secondary learning, brought it up during roll call.
Many of you have been connected to North Star at some point in your lives, and we know that you carry the Navigator way with you. We also acknowledge that because of reconfiguration, all of our elementary schools are beginning anew this week. It's bittersweet, but it's also full of potential and great opportunity.
The two remaining town schools were also rebranded with a single new mascot, the Cubs. Peterson Elementary near the Coast Guard base Kodiak will still be a K-5 elementary and retain its mascot, the Puffins. But it will also have several staff new to the school. Micka says many of the previous employees there left the island when their military spouses were transferred to another base.
It was really a fruit basket shuffle. Every campus has new staff, yeah. New collaboration.
Those changes mean adjusting schedules too, including bus routes and when school starts.
Our youngest East are going to start first, 7:45, and then Main at 8. Peterson's starting at 7:50, which is the same time they started last year. And then Kodiak Middle School and Kodiak High School are starting 15 minutes later than last year.
Superintendent Micka says this will likely impact traffic around the island. Both East and Main are near major roads in Kodiak and will likely have more traffic than in past years.
We're going to have 10 buses at East for drop-off and pickup. And so, especially at East, parents give us grace as we work through the first couple of days and get everyone trained on the traffic pattern out there.
She also says there may be some delays as drivers get used to the new routes. And elementary kids won't be the only ones seeing changes this year. The district school board voted to ban cell phones during instruction.
Unfortunately, what we see a lot, or what we have seen, is that the cell phones are being used, you know, for meetups or for social media, watching movies, and they've been a distraction to the instruction.
Cell phones were already banned in Kodiak Middle School, but high schoolers will be subject to the ban now, too. Phones will still be allowed before and after school as well as during lunch, but are expected to be kept in lockers during class. Mika says she understands how the technology can be good for students, but that's also why the school provides other devices like iPads. And Kodiak's middle and high schools will also be offering more rigorous honors classes this year.
We need to do more for our advanced students and not focus only on our students that need to close the gap in learning, but that we also need to ensure that our students that are already coming in to us ready to learn and coming into us advanced, that we are meeting their needs.
All students are eligible for the honors program. School starts on September 2nd. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Benoit.
KMXT is supported in part by the Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center, providing support for victims of domestic and or sexual violence. 907-486-6171.
If you enjoy this podcast, make sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts. Our staff put together KMXT stories every week to help you keep up to date on the archipelago's latest news. And that's it for this week's edition of the KMXT Weekly Wrap. Again, I'm Davis Hovey. We'll be back next week, same time, same place. Thanks for tuning in.